The reading this morning comes from A New Beginning by John O'Donohue, and you'll also find it printed in your order of service. In out-of-the-way places of the heart, where your thoughts never think to wander, this beginning has been quietly forming, waiting until you are ready to emerge. For a long time it has watched your desire, feeling the emptiness grow inside you, noticing how you willed yourself on, still unable to leave what you had outgrown. It watched you play with the safety of seduction and the gray promises of the sameness whispered. Heard the waves of turmoil rise and relent, wondered, would you always live like this? Then, the delight when your courage kindled and out you stepped onto new ground. Your eyes young again with energy and dream, a path of plentitude opening before you. Though your destination is not yet clear, you can trust the promise of this opening. Unfurl yourself into the grace of beginning that is at one with your life's desire. Awaken your spirit to adventure. Hold nothing back. Learn to find ease in risk. Soon you will be home in a new rhythm, for your soul senses the world that awaits you.
I'm going to start the sermon at the very beginning. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Don't worry, not science, but a picture of beginning. The book of Genesis goes on. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was moving over the face of the waters. And God said, let there be light. And there was light. And God saw that the light was good, and God distinguished between the light and the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness night. And there was evening, and there was morning, one day. Most of you know the rest of the drill. The second day, God creates the skies, then the earth and the seas, then the grasses and plants and trees, then the birds and sea creatures, followed by the animals, the humans, and finally, the seventh day, God rests. I love this beautiful passage from Genesis. It speaks to me about a truth in life, not about the scientific beginnings of the universe. To me, seeing it in that sense actually desecrates the beauty of the text. Genesis, rather, is about beginnings, new beginnings. It's about the universal rhythm of endings followed by beginnings, the constant interplay in the universe of form and formlessness, chaos and order, as the universe unfolds. This is the way of the universe that's constantly dying and reforming, ending and beginning again. And this is not a once in a life of the universe kind of happening. Genesis doesn't just happen once, 5,000 years or 14 billion years ago. Genesis happens all the time, sometimes smack in the middle of our own lives. Every day in the universe, there are beginnings and there are endings. Stars explode and die. New stars are born. New galaxies come into being. The effects of the Big Bang continue to ripple across the universe 14 billion years after it happens. The Big Bang permeates everything. There's this universal dance between chaos and creation. Nothingness, form, chaos, disillusion, form again, endings, beginnings, becomings. This is the cosmic dance. We can see this dance of beginnings and endings and beginnings in our own earth. Mountains are created out of volcanoes and geologic plates coming together. Then the elements slowly erode the mountains 1 millimeter at a time, eventually down to nothingness. Hiking a few years ago from the south rim of the Grand Canyon to the north rim, I had the opportunity to walk through a good chunk of the Earth's history. The Grand Canyon story begins about 1.7 billion years ago with the creation of a great mountain range that then over time was eroded down, until now that mountain range is actually the bottom of the canyon, the base of the canyon. Then came more geologic uplift with the North American and Pacific plates colliding, volcanoes, oceans coming in and retreating from the area, rain, ice, the mighty Colorado River, all that shapes the canyon as we see it today. Hiking through the canyon, I was able to descend 1.7 billion years in the Earth's history and able to touch rocks that were that old at the base of the canyon. I felt closer to the Earth's remarkable history, this never-ending cycle of endings and beginnings. And of course, it's not just the planet itself that has this rhythm. Living things do as well. The trees, from a seed, a mighty tree grows, and then it dies. Its organic matter becomes part of the soil, nurturing new seeds to become trees. The Earth is this huge, intricate system of endings and beginnings. And we can see the same cosmic dance in our own human lives. We are born, created with the fusion of a sperm and an ovum. As we grow, both in utero and later, some of our cells die and new ones are born. Eventually, we die, returning to the earth, part of the great cycle of life. We replicate this cosmic dance. And it makes sense because we're made of the same stuff as the stars. And the cycle of endings and beginnings in our life, this cycle is not just physical for us. It's part of the fabric of life woven into our lives as we grow from infants to children to adolescents to young adults, middle age, old age. Adolescence is a great snapshot of this dance with this complex alchemy of endings. As our childhood comes to an end and fits and starts, and beginnings as our adulthood begins, similarly fitfully. So our lives are full of transitions. And these transitions, as parts of our lives end and new parts begin, these transitions are not easy. They call us often to let go of a part of ourselves that is dying, and to embrace a new part that's becoming. Much of the time, we don't exactly welcome these transitions in our lives, but the fact we don't welcome them doesn't seem to impact whether they come or not. They still come. Life has a way of upending the status quo, whether we want it to or not. Watch out, heads up for the wrecking ball, in the words of a lyric from Mary Chapin Carpenter. Or these lines from a poem from Marge Piercy, which describes how upended a life can be when great love, something good, comes into it. She writes, "Great love can cause derailment. Coaches upended, people screaming, luggage strewn over the mountainside, blood and paper on the grass. Great love is a train wreck." Interesting. But think of the chaos and the mayhem when the Earth's plates collide. And this is kind of what happens to our lives periodically, too. And given this, it's kind of unfortunate that most of us, probably not all of us, but most of us like things the way they are. We like things the way they are. We don't like change. Change makes us anxious at the least. This is why transitions are such a profound challenge. This is why we, many of us, strive to play in the seduction of safety, as John O'Donohue put it in the reading today. We prefer the safety of the sheltered harbor, the gray promises of sameness, as he put it, not the rough and tumble of the open sea. It is hard to leave the harbor and set our sails, unfurl ourselves to become something new and different. But we know staying in the same safe harbor is spiritually deadly. And it's not possible to do anyway. So all this is why we have decided to focus our monthly sermon themes this year on transitions and also our Wellspring Wednesday programming. On transitions, endings and beginnings, endings and beginnings. My hope is that all of us will be able to gain some wisdom about the transitions we're currently going through and will go through in our lives, and that we as a spiritual community will gain some wisdom about the transitions we as a community go through together. Now, there are seriously an infinite number of human transitions we could have talked about in the sermons this year. So with some input from last year's Wellspring folks, we, out of this abundance of themes, chose these themes to focus on. In October, we'll talk about the transitions in relationships between parents and kids. All of us know in our relationship with our parents that that relationship goes through transitions. If we have children, we know the same is true there. And often these are very challenging transitions. In November, we'll look at work, the transitions in the work part of our lives. In December, we'll look at transitions in spiritual journeys. In January, we'll look at the transitions that take place in our consciousness, in our understanding, how we shift to seeing the world in a new way. And the specific focus of that will be on race and racism and how we might come to a new understanding of those complicated things. In February, we'll talk about failure. Failure is a great impetus, often, for transitions. In March, we'll talk about love, especially in romantic relationships. I'll do a sermon on love's comings, the beginning of relationships, and then a service on love's goings, relationships that end through divorce, breakup, death. In April, our focus will be the transitions in our self-understandings, especially with a focus on our understandings of ourselves as sexual beings. And then in May, to wrap it up, we'll look at sickness, health, and aging, all of which cause numerous transitions in our lives. Today, I want to set kind of a spiritual context for this thematic focus. And not surprisingly, our angle on transitions here is spiritual. And I think that ultimately getting through life's transitions each time is a spiritual endeavor. As I was thinking about transitions in a spiritual context this summer, what came to mind for me was the rhythm of spiritual pilgrimages. So I want to talk about that. The anthropologist Victor Turner identifies three main stages in a spiritual pilgrimage. The first one is separation. When we embark on a spiritual pilgrimage, we leave our ordinary everyday lives. We cross a threshold into a place of spiritual pilgrimage. In many religious traditions, when you go to a pilgrimage site, you literally cross water, either over it on a bridge or through it, swimming or walking, to get into the pilgrimage site. The second stage for Turner is that place of transition, the place where the pilgrimage happens. It's different when we cross that threshold. Pilgrimage, he says, is a betwixt and between experience. We're between life as we ordinarily know it and life that will be different when we go back to our old life. That area of pilgrimage is a borderland. It's chaotic. The rules and conventions of ordinary life don't apply. Turner calls it a liminal place. And borderlands are places of great danger. They're difficult to travel through, but also a great opportunity. We can become different people when we come out the other end. In borderlands, we flirt with chaos, with formlessness, even with death, the death of our old selves. And yet it also is fertile ground for new beginnings. It can open ourselves, pilgrimage, to new thoughts, new perspectives, new ideas. A fantastic example of pilgrimage, let me go to the third stage before I get to that. The third stage is reincorporation, reintegration, going back to our old life, but somehow different, somehow changed by the pilgrimage experience. And a great example of how this flow works is the pilgrimage Malcolm X took to Mecca in 1964. That's a real focal point of his spiritual story and his autobiography. And you can see these three phases working in that pilgrimage. First of all, Malcolm X boarded a plane in New York. He left his ordinary everyday life, and he crossed an ocean and a continent and landed in the Middle East in Saudi Arabia. Then as he traveled into Mecca, he took off his everyday clothes and put on the white clothes of the pilgrim. And that different clothing symbolizes that it's different space, that the old rules of how society works are not operative in this space. And for Malcolm X, as he made the circuit of that pilgrimage site in Mecca with hundreds of thousands of fellow pilgrims, something shifted within him, within his understanding of the world and himself. He saw pilgrims interacting as equals. Pilgrims from different countries, different languages, different color skins, different understandings of Islam, all relating as equals. And he realized that Islam might have the capacity to be a vehicle of racial unity, not division, as had been his focus. At the end of the pilgrimage, Malcolm left Mecca. He flew home, back, put on his ordinary clothes, flew back to New York, back to his familiar life, familiar surroundings, but something was different on the inside. He had a new way of seeing the world, and he started acting differently as a result. And so it has been for me in the pilgrimages in my life. I want to share three very different pilgrimages I've gone through. And they're not really the traditional go to a sacred site kind of pilgrimage, but they have the same rhythm. And really each one was a moment of transition. The first was my semester studying abroad in Sri Lanka. When I flew into Sri Lanka, I plunged into such a completely different culture, different language, different religion. And it was a really hard experience, one of the hardest experiences of my life. But through it, I learned so much and I became a different person. For one thing, I really found my call to ministry in Sri Lanka amongst a different religious people. For another thing, I found an underlying call to try to build bridges where it seems like there's divisions. I came back a different person. A second pilgrimage was that hike across the Grand Canyon. For me, backpacking always feels like a pilgrimage in a way because I leave my ordinary life. I leave the comforts of everyday life. The only comforts I have are what I can carry on the back. And it kind of strips away everything. The first step into the canyon, I remember so vividly because for me, it felt like I was crossing a threshold. I was going into a different realm. And that hike, it was 3 days. It was incredibly challenging physically, especially the last day. An elevation gain of 4,200 feet, hot June weather, big pack on the back. It got so I did not think I'd make it. I had to take the next step. Not going to make it. Take the next step. That's how I got each of those last steps done. I did it. And the hard nature of that hike, the incredible beauty of the scenery, the chance to experience almost 2 billion years of the Earth's history, when I came home, I somehow was a different person. And a final example of pilgrimage I want to share was my mom's death last January. When I went to see her that last time, I definitely stepped into a whole different realm. And any of you who have been with a loved one in their dying times, you know it's different. Often we say, it's just so surreal. It doesn't seem real. It's not our ordinary world. Everything's different. Everything works differently. On the first day of that visit, my mom had a doctor's visit, which ended with her decision to go into hospice care. 30 hours later, she was dead. And then there was a week waiting for the memorial service. Talk about limbo, liminal land. That time between a death and a memorial service is certainly that way. And then the memorial service is over. The family scatters. I get in a car with my family and drive back to Appleton. And I go back to work, regular old life, but somehow I'm different. Things have changed. In a sense, I'm a motherless child, at least in one sense. And I've been trying to work out what that means ever since. These transitions, just about every transition I can think of in my life, follows these three stages of the pilgrimage. Separation, that time in the liminal borderland, things are open to change, a new opportunity, and then reincorporation back to the old life as a different person. And I think this is the flow that we'll come back to over and over again this year as we look at these different forms of transition. And it's the universal flow of life, of endings and new beginnings coming out of them. For every ending, there is also a beginning again. The words of T.S. Eliot. What we call the beginning is often the end. And to make an end is to make a beginning. The end is where we start from.